हरिः
ॐ
सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। ओके सो नाउ वी आर ऑन। यस्टरडे वाज द फर्स्ट डे दैट वी यू नो बिगन एंड सो देन इट वाज वी डिड the Ahnika 1, which is the first day. Now this is the second day. Now we're doing Ahnika 2, which is the second day. But that doesn't mean that next time on the third day we'll do the third Ahnika. We'll probably still be on the second one. Just for the record. Okay? Okay, so then we were going with Sutra 121. Vada is the form of debate in which two contestants uphold the thesis and antithesis, paksha, pratipaksha, parigraha, by substantiation, sadhana, and refutation, upa, lumpa, with the help of pramanas and tarka, hypothetical reasoning. So they're going to uphold their thesis, you know, with substantiation, and try to refute the others, in other words, what's wrong with the other thesis. Then, without being contradicted by proven doctrine, siddhanta virudha, and employing the five components of inference, pancha avayava upamana. So presenting your thesis, it has to be according to the five components of pancha vinyaya. It can't be contradicted by proved doctrine, or in other words, the shastra, or everything that the acharyas have given, or just things that devotees have worked with and is seen to have been established like that. So that will be vada, right? Vada is the upholding of such thesis. So in the commentary, the third paragraph. Vada is upholding of such thesis and antithesis. Oh no, did we do the second one? Two contradictory characteristics attributed to different subjects do not constitute thesis and antithesis. E.g., the self is eternal and knowledge is not eternal. Right? So they have to be on the same point. Like here, it's like the self is eternal, knowledge is non-eternal, or knowledge is eternal, knowledge is non-eternal, or self is eternal, self is not eternal. You know, like that, it has to be common ground. It can't be one is talking about apples, the other is talking about oranges, and the discussion's not on fruit, right? There has to be a common point like that. Vada is the upholding of such thesis and antithesis. It is qualified in the sutra by the words pramana, tarka, sadhana, upalambha, which is to be understood as substantiation with the help of pramanas and tarka. Pramana, tarka, sadhana, as well as refutation with the help of pramanas and tarka. Pramana, tarka, upalambha. So that means you're upholding your thesis and your refutation of the other's thesis has to be according to the pramanas, and according to Tarka, you know, where you're analyzing this aspect is there. In other words, the actual reason. So Tarka is like the reasoning aspect of the process. You're going to be going through the pramanas when you're making the Panchanga Nyaya. But when you're going through, you still have to apply actually reasoning. You can't just do anything you want. It has to actually have that use of intelligence that you're showing why the different options are there and what is their value or non-value, you know, and how they function, right? So it's very specific. In other words, logic is very specific. It's not like the contemporary idea that anything is whatever you feel it is or what you want it to be. No, it has a very specific definition. In other words, in the case of Vada, both substantiation and refutation are done with the help of pramanas and tarka. Sadhana means substantiating one's own thesis, and upalambha means refuting the opponent's thesis. Huh. Our smiling man is here. These sadhana and upalambha are related to both the contestants, i.e. both offer their sadhana and upalambha, and are adhered to so long as the claim of one is finally silenced and that of the other remains. That which is silenced is refuted, and that which remains is established. Okay. Though the pramanas and tarka are already included in the components of inference, pramana and tarka are also separately mentioned in the sutra to indicate the relation of substantiation, sadhana, and refutation, upalambha, with both the contestants. Right, so they're already part of what you're going to be doing, because you're giving your reasons, you're giving your examples, and trying to bring about that drishtanta, that understanding, that vision of being able to appreciate it in pratyaksha. And then you're also bringing it near and showing, so just like this one that now you understand, I've made my point, you didn't understand it. I give an example, you understand the point. So just like that point that now you understand, what my thesis that I gave is the same. So you're still going to be using the intelligence. You're going to take it through and show how it's going. You're going to actually make the endeavor, because if you give your example, it doesn't work, you give another example. You know, you keep applying that process of tarka until it works. That's the point. So that'll be the form of it, but you have to apply. Just like cooking, they have its various techniques in its pot, and in this pot you cook like this, and not when you use that technique, and all these things. But you still have to make the endeavor. So it's not that just I magically do these things that happen. So I have to be making the endeavor to see that there's a logical development of the process. Okay. Otherwise, if in a debate both the contestants are motivated by the arguments for substantiation alone, it would not be called vada. Right? So if they're only trying to substantiate their point, the other one the other, it won't actually be vada. I.e., it will not be a case of vada so long as both the contestants try merely to substantiate their own thesis without also refuting each other. Because I'm saying one thing, the other person's saying another thing. And now if I'm just presenting my thing and they're just presenting theirs, then you don't, where is understanding, what's the difference? Where's the strength? Where's the weakness? Where is the reasoning? Where is it strong and where is it weak? So the person's making their point and substantiating, but there's a weakness in their presentation. Or there's a weakness in the thesis. You have to point that out because you want to remove that aspect. Otherwise, people can go on forever just telling how great their idea is and everything. But it has to be able to be substantiated. You have to be able to show that, yes, this works or it doesn't work. You know, it's just like Pandavaji was saying that when he was in Greece once, on the street there, then he bumped into a communist, young guy, you know, with that very fired up, you know, communist, you know, ideology and all that. And he's trying to push all these things, because Greece is not communist, you know. And so then he pointed out, hey, I grew up in communism. So what are you talking about, this greatness and wonderfulness, you know? So the whole point is he's saying all these ideologies. Yes, you know, everyone's equal and everyone will have the same facility, this, that. It sounds great, but then when you go and actually logically apply it, how is that supposed to happen? Because in so doing, you're going to see the common person doesn't have much money and the rich people have a lot of money. So now if we take the money away from those rich people, you know, and then all the common people's standard of living will go up, right? And so then whatever we are, let's say we're lower middle class, we'll become middle class or higher middle class. And yes, the rich man will come down to our level. So in this way, everybody will be enjoying very nicely. What they don't understand is those rich people are rich because they are working hard to become rich, if he's going to work that hard and he's not going to get any of it, he's only going to get the same as everybody else, why would he work that hard? Right? It's the sense of justice. I put in this much work and I get this much. I put in more work, I should get more. Right? So therefore, then why would he do that? So that money's not going to be there. So when you say everyone's equal, means everyone is going to be poor. That will be communism. There's no such thing. It's interesting, even though it's just a for Tulsi Das, it's just a picture. When I made that point, his picture smiled more. Yeah. So everyone's going to be poor, and we see it in Russia. Everyone's poor. I mean, except for the guys running the system, of course. But that's the whole thing, is because they're running, they expect more. But why can't they accommodate the businessman? He also gets more. You know, so then everyone's poor. You go to China, everyone's poor. You go to Cuba, everyone's poor. You go to Nicaragua, everyone's poor. So wherever there's the communist regime, everyone is poor. This idea that no, everybody, the middle class lifestyle that I'm living now, that I can afford to, you know, say all these things because, you know, I have facility, that will remain. No, it won't. It will disappear. It's because of capitalism that you have the variety. If it's just you're just working for the state, there'll be one thing. Like you saw before, there's one car, there's one, you know, scooter, there's one, you know, bread, there's one this, there's one that. There isn't a variety, because capitalists make that variety. Communists don't make the variety. So that means you will have nothing, and whatever you have will all be, yes, it'll all be the same. So this is the point, is if you don't point out the fault, you can't actually come to the conclusion which is right, because otherwise the guy with the communist idea is going to keep talking his ideal platform, you know, forever, right? You know, at least until he hits 30, right? You know, so the whole point is he's just going to keep talking that. But until you point out the faults, then it's Vada, and you can find what is the actual point. So in other words, you're going through and cleaning out what is useless, taking out the rocks, taking out the chaff, taking out, you know, all that, and just leaving just the proper grain. And then you said, okay, now you have something proper. Yes? No? Yeah. Okay. Then the use of the words pramana and tarka further implies that in a vada, substantiation refutation may alternatively be effected with the help of those alone, i.e. only pramana and tarka, without employing the inference components, because it is found that the pramanas can prove a thesis without being connected with any components of inference. So he's making this point, is that you can just use pramana and tarka on its own. Right? But if you use the inference components, then it has a very efficient, natural form. Means you're just trying to use the tarka, but in the tarka, you're going to have to give your reasons, you're going to have to give your examples, you're going to have to give your similarities. So in other words, you're still going to use, but you may not be officially going through them. You're going back and forth because it's a discussion. That's where then you come in with the what do you call it? Not the somebody, vibhadi, that's music. Not sambho vipralamba, that's rasa. What's the point of vishaya shamshaya?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have that, you know, and uttara and like that. That's where you're applying this pramana and tarka. But you're still going to go through those components that you're trying to get it in vada to the conclusion. And in there, if you can give the example and you don't need to give the similarity, then that part may be skipped, you know? So yes. That's the whole point. If I make a statement and everyone understands it, I don't need to use the other four components. But if I say my point, no one understands it, I give the reason. Now if they understand it, I don't have to use the other three. Right? But now if they don't, then I give my example. Now by my example, they understand I don't have to bring it to the point of a similarity. Right? And then of course, because I've already given my thesis, it's not that I have to establish it. It's already been there. Now I just I bring out the various aspects of it. And then in doing so, I may, again, use reasoning and all these things to embellish it. So these five components, these avayavas, they're the natural form that it takes to establish a point. But if the point is already understood, you don't have to continue and go through. It's not a ritualistic thing. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Vada pravadatam aham. Among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. Bhagavad Gita 10:32. Among logicians, there are different kinds of argument. Supporting one's argument with evidence that also supports the opposing side is called jalpa. Merely trying to defeat one's opponent is called vitanda, but the actual conclusion is called vada. This conclusive truth is a representation of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 10:32 purport. So Prabhupada is pointing out that here is that you're trying to, Krishna is the conclusive truth. That's only gained through vada. Right? So that's the process that's used. Krishna's already, he says it's him. That's why it's effective. That's why if you use it, then Krishna reveals himself. He's pleased. Because it's not through logic you'll understand Krishna. It's through using the logical process in trying to serve Krishna and please and understand that Krishna reveals himself because he is this vada. He is the conclusive truth. Right? So when we're saying that you get to Siddhanta, that's going to be Krishna, but that's through vada, because you don't get Siddhanta in Jalpa or Vitanda. It's not possible. It means somebody on the side may get it, but it's not that the persons involved understand it. So it's only through that. So that's the process that you're using these five components, the panchanga nyaya, and then you're going to be trying to establish the point and remove what's improper. Then by doing that, you'll come to the point and Krishna being pleased, then the result, it's revealed. Then it's understood. Otherwise, then it doesn't happen. That's the whole point. Because you're not going to understand without Krishna's blessing. So you can say, no, we can do this. We don't have to follow all that. But the point is this Krishna says he is this. So if you don't follow it, why would you understand him? Because he's saying, you do this, this is me. So that means you want to understand Krishna, then you have to understand what is Krishna. So if you don't follow that process that Krishna says he is, why will that bring you to a deeper understanding of Krishna? So that's very logical. You can say, well, that's dogmatic. No, that's logic. Dogmatic is, no, I can do whatever I want. And there's no proof of it. There's no establishing. No, but, you're just saying, oh, you're just this. You're a racist. You're this. You're that. All these kind of things that are used in the modern context, they're being dogmatic because they won't discuss it. They won't discuss it. That Vriti, His Holiness Sahasraswami. Vada, discussion, is a kind of debate between two parties, the exponent and the opponent, on a particular subject. Right? Like it said before, it has to be the same subject. Each party tries to establish its own position and refute that of the other, arguing against any theory propounded by the other. Both, however, are trying to arrive at the truth by applying the methods of reasoning and logic. Right? So reasoning will be the tarka, right? And the logic will be using the panchanga nyaya, with the pramanas and everything like that, all the different kinds of evidence. This is an effective an efficient way to reach valid knowledge if both parties are honest and free from prejudices. Because also when you say logic, as we see when he unfolds it, it's all based on the pramanas. So when he says with pramana and reasoning or tarka, then you can get everything done because that's what you're using. So it's not necessarily go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It might be go 1, 2, 3-2-3, you know, 3-4-2-3. You may be moving in there because which pramana is going to give the effect, that's the one you're using. So when you're just giving the reasoning, then you're using the anuman. You know, when you're giving the example, you're using the pratyaksha. And then when you're using the similarity, what's that one called?
Upamana.
Upamana. Upamana. Yeah, so the upamana, like that. And so the Siddhanta has to show all of them together. That it's all, it means you've used that process to reach there. That means those processes would be still included. It's not that it's something else. You know, it's not like the end justifies the means, that kind of thing. No, the means used get what it is. If you're making in the conclusion, you have a potato sabji, that means you would have used potatoes. So potatoes, some ghee, some spices, you know, some heat, you know, this kind of thing like that you're using, then you're going to end up with these potatoes that have all those things in them. You know, so that's the whole process, is that they'll be there. Yes? No? Pretty good.
This one.
Yeah. Okay. Sutra 1-2-2. Jalpa is a form of debate characterized by all the features mentioned in the previous sutra, defining vada, but the substantiation and reputation are affected through chala, jati, and nigrahastana. Chala, jati, nigrahastana, sadhana, upalampa. Right? So you see, instead of it being through that point of the vadas, you're trying to come to the truth. They're just trying to win, right? So they're not. They try to establish their thing. They're tricky with the other. So it doesn't have the element of vada. That's why Prabhupada's mentioning these other things. They're just merely trying to defeat one's opponent. It's called vitanda, and then supporting with evidence, but that also supports the opposing side. It's called jalpa. You may say things that they like also. Like you see modern politicians, then they try to say something that both sides like. But it's not that they're using, what was that? Upamana. Was it?
Yes, Maharaj. Upamana.
Yeah, upamana. That they're showing one thing and then showing the principle in the other. That the detail is different. They're trying to show detail is similar. So in that way, your argument actually supports their argument. So how do you get to any proper conclusion? And you want to win the argument. So, you know, you go through all the motions, but you're using these secondary aspects of chala, jati, and nigrahastana, which are not actually very substantial, like that. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. By the expression, yatokta upamana is to be understood as, one, where substantiation and refutation are affected through pramanas and tarka. Two, not being contradicted by proof doctrine. Three, employing the five inference components. And four, upholding the thesis and antithesis. Right? So that is then, you know, proper. The expression chala jati nigrahastana sadhana upalampa means that in jalpa, substantiation, refutation are affected through chala jati nigrahastana over and above the four aspects of vada. The debate characterized by all these features is jalpa, right? So you have those things that you're going to have that. You're going to be trying to do that, but you're going to go above and beyond that into all these other areas. So they become the prominent aspect, right? So you may still be using your you know, proof doctrine and upholding the thesis and all these different things, but you're not using just the emphasis on the reasoning and the evidence. You're using other tricky methods, you know, that nowadays would, you know, be your kind of basis of rhetoric and these kind of aspects, where people are going to give that. The point is to win the argument. That's why you learn rhetoric, is to win the argument. But in the Veda, it means in Gotama, you learn what is the rhetoric, but it's so that you avoid that and stick to what's actually going to be Vada, like that. It's not about winning the argument, it's about finding the truth. That chala, jati, and nigrahastana act as the auxiliaries in the case of substantiation and refutation, effected with the help of pramanas, because these defend one's own position by negating the counter-arguments of the opponent. By themselves, however, these have no efficacy in substantiating any thesis, right? So on their own, they don't have any value. If you're using them to go through the process to establish what your point, then they may have a value that they can establish something. Otherwise, on their own, they can't. Just because someone says something and you change the meaning doesn't mean you substantiate anything, right? So if you're using defense, so sometimes you see if you're dealing with people that aren't dealing properly, don't have proper understanding, one may use them, but if you're still, you have to still be trying to bring it back to the refutation of substantiation is on pramanas and tarka, on the evidence and on the logic, you know, or on the reasoning. So, you know, you can still use it to get to that point, but generally it means that the other person won't understand. So it doesn't, you may come to the point of vada, but the other person didn't come to the point of vada. And so it's not complete. As it is said by Gotama, jalpa and vitanda are employed for the purpose of defending the knowledge well ascertained, just as the fence of the thorny branches is for the protection of the sprout. Nyaya Sutra 4250. So he's pointing out jalpa and vitanda can be used to defend knowledge that's actually, you know, well understood in that. So you're talking about the Shastra, you're talking about tradition, you're talking about what the Acharyas have said. So if you have to use this jalpa or vitanda to establish it or protect it, you can. But ideally, you're dealing with someone who actually also wants to know, because that's the point of vada. It properly, you come to the conclusion, both parties, they actually understand. But if you're using jalpa and vitanda, then you can defend the knowledge. You can defend, like what Prabhupada says, you can defend what the Acharyas say in the Shastra against someone else's attack of them. It doesn't necessarily mean they'll come to the actually understanding, and you haven't necessarily been able to use and establish the proper understanding, but at least you can defend against improper understandings and application of logic by the other party. That makes sense. So it's not you're defending your own prestige. You're defending the truth. Does that make sense? Because normally you wouldn't have to use them, but if you have to use them, then they can be used. In jalpa, these chala, etc., are employed in the capacity of auxiliaries, and these have no independent efficacy in the substantiating a thesis. In the case of refutation, however, they have independent efficacy. So we see is that these three can be used on their own to defeat someone, but they can't be used on their own to establish something. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the what do you call it? Because in its own, if you're just talking about, oh, there's this group and you're talking stereotypes, you can't necessarily establish something. You know, or chala, you're changing the meanings by the synonyms and these kind of things, then that's not going to establish anything like that. Or you know, speaking in a way that a person doesn't even understand what you're talking about, doesn't establish anything. But it can defend a proper thesis, right? And it can defeat them, but it doesn't mean that it itself can establish anything. Only as an auxiliary to the actual pramanas and logic can it be useful to help establish. But on their own, they can't establish anything. They can help defeat. So I think we'll see this coming up in what do you call it? Vitanda. No, I'm just saying Vitanda, that they'll use these things just to defeat, because that's all they want to do is defeat. But because they don't actually know what they're talking about, it's actually nigrahastam. They've already defeated themselves because they don't actually have anything. But they're trying to defeat you anyway because it makes them happy.
Also, Maharaj, we using these three means actually we are pointing out if somebody using, where is the fault that they are using this. Mm. So,
yes.
Establishing our own thesis, we don't require because it's the conclusive truth. So, if somebody
yes.
is using that, then we use to point it out. So, that's why it is applicable in showing the fallacies in others' thesis.
Yes. To establish, but it can also be used. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, to establish our own thing, then. We need not go in that direction unless and until it's just to shut the other person's...
Yes, in that case, that sometimes you just say something crazy and then they just stop because it's like the nigrahastam. You use something there, a chala, jati, or even just present a nigrahastana, and that it bewilders them. And then they just stop and now you can start talking again. You know, or just it's useless, so you end the conversation. But like you said, it is establishing the absolute truth, you don't need them at all. But to point out others' defects, you refer to them and point out how they're using and doing these things, that, you know, knowingly or unknowingly. You know, so that would be the natural thing, is that they're used as auxiliaries, you know, to defeat the other person, as I mentioned. Yeah, to defeat the other. It doesn't establish. You don't have to establish yours with it. But to defeat the other person, to show his weaknesses, you can use it, you know. Or if you just want to shut them up, you can actually use them directly just to bewilder them. And then having done that, then, you know, try to bring it back to the standard.
So we'll see in Vedanta Sutra how all the fallacies in Buddhism or other some, you know, schools are pointed out using that.
Okay. Yeah, it's also interesting because they call it Adhikarna. The Adhikarnas in the Vedanta Sutras, they're actually the run of Panchanga Nyaya. You know, whether it's one sutra or whether it's a whole run of them, it's actually going through those different, that process. So then in there, it'd be interesting is to point out in the context of the Panchanga Nyaya and the logic where the fallacies are. Because otherwise we know is that they say this, you say that, but it's not necessarily that you're understanding what they've said, what's actually wrong with it. You know, we take it as just that's their philosophy, but actually it doesn't make sense. It's not logical.
Yes.
And so you point out the fallacies, and that'll be, you know, then it keeps it connected to these 16 padarthas. It keeps it very nice. Wow, okay. Vriti, His Holiness Sahoja Swami. Jalpa, or wrangling, is a process by which the exponent and opponent try to attain victory over the other without making an honest attempt to come to the truth. There is an involvement of ego instead of a search for knowledge. Jalpa contains all the characteristics of a valid debate, except that of aiming to discover the truth. It is that type of discussion in which each party has a prejudice for his own view, and thus tries to gather all possible arguments in his own favor. Lawyers sometimes apply this method to win their cases at court. I think when he says sometimes, then that's a euphemism. Like that. I think they do it quite a lot, you know. Like that. Sutra 1, 2, 3. Okay. Jalpa mentioned the previous sutra becomes vitanda when the opponent has no care for establishing any thesis of its own. So the jalpa that's mentioned before is supposed to be basic, but they're not trying to establish their own thesis. So then they're just trying to defeat. So you can see as jalpa is kind of in between vada and vitanda. So the things that you would use that pull jalpa away from vada are the, basically the exclusive things used by the Vitanda. Please.
Maharaj, may I ask some question? I
Yes,
want to
please.
ask in those story about Srila Yamunacharya when he was a child and when he was invited to the king's yard for discussion with some pandit. And he asked three questions from him. No, he challenged him and he said, if I will tell three sentences and you should refute it. And was it a type of japa or it was vada? No, because for his first point was, as I remember, was that your mother, how to say,
is barren.
She doesn't have a child.
Yeah, so then that's going to be. You have something to say? Yes, yes.
So, yeah, he's just asking question. He doesn't have anything to prove. There is no philosophy to be proven, so it should be Vitanda only.
Yeah, but here it's that his purpose is he's come there to defeat this pundit. Because this pundit, then he is, you know, I think he's making a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sometimes mix this argument up with the one of Astavakra Muni.
Yeah.
Because it's a similar kind of thing. Because also then, what was it called? After he said the three questions, then the queen made a statement. What is it? Alabanduru. Yeah, which means, you know, he's victorious. So he was also then known by that name. So the point here was just to win. You're not establishing anything. So you could say, but the point was is that this pundit needed to be defeated because he himself, his only purpose was to defeat others. Like that. He may, you know, kind of use Jalpa and things like that, but his point was he just wanted to establish and show that he's the best logician. So then by him being defeated, then it would have been. But yeah, so that's what Haladaji was saying before, is that sometimes you may use these things to stop the other person in their attempt to give their own ideas because the whole direction that they're doing is improper. So in other words, if the other party is not interested in vada, these other elements may be given to at least defend the Vedic version and or to shut them up.
Also, Maharaj, that's the reason why among all the schools, the grammarians are considered the lowest because they don't have anything to prove. All they can do is point faults in others.
Yes, that's true. Grammarians always, oh, that's not how you use the word. But did they point out how wonderful you used all the other words? You know, you're speaking for 2 minutes, they don't say anything, but then you say one word, oh, that's not a word, and then everything you said for 2 minutes is written off. So then, yeah, they're just vitandis. So that's why it actually has to be about Siddhanta. That's what actually you have to get to. So that's why Krishna then mentions that point, is that that proper conclusion, that's Krishna, and that's come to through Vada. And the form of Vada then is going to be the Panchanga Nyaya, you know, where the evidences are given with reasoning, right? So that process, then that whole thing is Krishna because it ends in conclusion with Krishna. But for these others, they just want to establish their point and what is their favorite thing, or they like something in poetry and they don't like other things. So they're just trying to put down everybody else's form and establish their. So there's nothing actually, there is no Siddhanta. Because grammar is grammar. It's not like it's not up for discussion question. You know, it's just, here's the grammar. This is how it works. Now, you may want to emphasize this or that, or you think something's very nice in the system. No, but the shastra is already there. So the grammar is only useful in understanding and coming to a conclusion. If one only knows the grammar to simply argue, then yes, that's going to be a waste of time. So is that okay?
So how we can classify this discussion between them?
And we said it would be vitanda, but the point is he's using it in the proper way. Because if you have someone who's making so much distraction or misdirecting people, and they themselves can't understand what's the actual proper truth, then you may just come in defeat them so that they can't do that anymore. You know? But it itself didn't establish a thesis or a conclusion. It just showed that he's not as smart as he says he is. So much of the time you see in these things, that's all they're doing. Like, can't remember who else it was. I think the one with Kalidas. Because another way that they do is sometimes they have these so-called debates. Because technically they're not a debate. It's you could say it's an argument. It's a fight based on words and intellect. So that's why Manu then mentions these grammarians like that. They're in the mode of passion. So they're with kings. They're the mode of goodness within passion. That will be these kind of grammarians and logicians who just like to the battle of words. You know, while the kshatriya, it'll be physical battle out there with their politics or stuff like that. So they're not, even though they're Brahmins, they're not actually situated in the mode of goodness. They're goodness within passion, but they're not actual proper goodness. You know, in other words, the category of goodness. Then when you're dealing with just the yajnas and this and that and the rituals and all that aspect, it'll be that aspect of ignorance of goodness. Because it's just dealing with the externals like that. Then when you get into the shastras and this and that and teaching and studying and that, then that brings it to the passion. And then the actual goodness of goodness, then that will be, the level of Brahman understanding, level of the primary, the primary, secondary creations, and that kind of level of knowledge. So in here, they just like to argue with words. So it's in the mode of passion. So to stop that, you may have to use vitanda to defeat them. But then at another point, then with the proper people or proper individuals, then you can have a discussion on trying to understand the actual Siddhanta. Does that make sense? Like that. Then you can have Vada, because unless you clear out all these people who are going to distract, you can't get anywhere. Like you see, sometimes in the past we'd be having a discussion, we're going along very nicely. Someone has some issues about management or some other, issue in the philosophy or this, or where's the jiva come from, or this or that, or, just something. And they have their own opinion. It's not necessarily they're looking for an answer. That's why you can't give them one. Right? So it's much of the time is like we were saying before, is that you're discussing something and it's on a certain point. And as a side thing or as an example, it might give something that gives rise to bringing up the issue or an issue. And so then when the issue comes up, it's not actually vada, where they want to understand it much of the time. Sometimes it is, but much of the time it's not, because even though you go through, you defeat their philosophy, or whatever it is that their opposition or their doubts, and you've established the proper thing amongst others in the audience or in the Sangha. But that individual, it doesn't change. The question comes up again. So you'll see as they'll go to another lecture, they'll bring up the same doubt. You know, and they'll do that year after year, decade after decade. So the same points they're bringing up about the soul and falling and this and that, we were dealing with in the 80s. You know, like that, or even farther back. It's the same point. It's never changed because some just don't want to adjust. I remember having a discussion with somebody quite strongly in the class again, and then after the class, we'd sit for hours. This went on for 3 years. Finally, after 3 years, they understood what I was saying. And so then he came to the point of, okay, now we can move forward. But then, no, but they were saying, okay, you're saying that, but the rest of the society is not saying that. So now they can continue their fight and argument and go out and, you know. Because their point is, I can't surrender the society until this point is worked out. It's the crucial, you know, point. You know, where does the soul come from? How does it fall? That's the most, because if you don't know that, you can't, you know, perform devotional service. You can't chant, you can't go back to Godhead. When it's like, no, it's on the side. It's that's like, you don't have to worry about it. You know, you order a drink, it does come with a cup. But his whole thing is about the cup and this and that. And no, you just order the drink, you'll get a cup. You know, so that kind of thing, then that has jalpa or the aspect of some people, it's just vitanda. They just like to bring up arguments in the class just to throw it off and they enjoy. Like I've been noticing more and more in the last some years that it's not an uncommon thing that points are brought up just because you'll get more, the intensity of the presentation will increase. And the person who's asking the question actually enjoys the intensity. It has nothing to do with the knowledge that's being discussed. It's the intensity, especially if you get angry and say this and that and speak very strongly. They're sitting there with big grins on their face, so they understand nothing. They just, their whole point was just, what buttons can I push so that I can get some emotional, you know, energy? Does that make sense? So this is vitanda best. They just want to do this because they get a taste out of it. You know, it's based on their false ego. It's based on false identities. It's not based. So as Haladhar Prabhu points out, if you point this out and show how they're using these, then it also shuts it down a bit because they think they're being super intelligent, super clever. They're more clever than anybody. When actually, no, they just have a bigger false ego than anybody. And that's why they're using these techniques. But to defeat such people, you can also use the same thing back at them. Right? Means if to shut them up you use it and it clears it, then you could go back to discussing with the other devotees. Or in defeating them, you go through the whole logical, you follow the bhava, and that everyone else will understand, but that person who asked the question doesn't understand. So that's also a very common thing. I've seen so many times that the person who asked the question absolutely can't understand what you're talking about, but everybody else in the room understands. So then you can consider that a success, because they can't understand anything because they don't want to. But at least everybody else did. So you just have to see, is it worthwhile going through that whole process for the benefit of everyone else, or is it worth just keeping them quiet by pointing out their fault and then just stopping it? You know, bringing to the point of nigrahastana that they just don't know what to say. Yes? Okay. Haladarji, anything? Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj. In the beginning, Vatsyayana Rishi says that a vitandi, ultimately, when it's pointed out that he's doing vitanda, he has to accept and give up his position as a vitandi. If he doesn't give up, then if he accepts, then he has to accept he doesn't have any thesis. Then he is be considered as a, he says, lunatic. He'll be considered. So like, yes. This example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussing with that Kavira what is it? Kavi, I forgot his name. Yeah, who is Digvijay Pandit. Then first he just, you know, points out his faults by saying how he has faults in his, you know, how he used the metaphor is wrong, the Alankaranas. And then at the time the debate ends, but next day then other devotees come, then he describes about Krishna like that.
Right. Yes, yes.
So that day he need not.
Is that?
That day he did not present. And next day then when people came, he gave up his position as Vedanti. Then he started just describing the absolute truth. Because people
yes.
ultimately want to listen from you. What is your thesis? If you don't have any, then it doesn't put you also in a good position ultimately.
Yes, yes. Yes. Does that make sense? Mataji? Yes? So in other words, it can be used as something to just clear the argument, but it's not something that we would use to establish the absolute truth, because it can't do that. Does that make sense? It's only an auxiliary to remove the faults in the other person's presentation. That makes sense? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, we have in Russia one personality. I think he's Vaitandika. He wrote a book. His name is Karl Birkstrasser, and he wrote a book about some dogmas of Lord of Chaitanya's teaching. And its book consists of 400 pages. And there he point by point, he wrote in the end of the book, in the light of teaching of Madhava. And in his book, he point after the point, criticized the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta from different angles. And in the beginning of book, he criticized it from the position of Madhava Sampradaya on the field of philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bheda against Vaita. And then all other points which he was not able to refute, he decided from the position of modern scientific atheism on the basis of induction. And in whole of this book, he has only one goal to prove that philosophy and history about life of Lord Chaitanya is a lie. And he's a it's his scientific book. It's called about some dogmas in Chaitanya's philosophy. But his public presentation in YouTube it sounds like lies of the Krishnaites. And
yeah.
Can we say that this book, his book, it's scientific book. He got a degree on the writing this book, and also. It's now its favorite study guide for all of the different organizations who are against of ISKCON. All of them study this book. And can we say that this book is an example of Vedanta? Or if it was not, if it was given in the form of the book, it's not Vedanta?
No, it can be. It's just. Because they just want to defeat, like you said, he's defeating Madhva with the Gaudiya, and then afterwards defeating anything else in the mud with the modern, but trying to show that the Gaudiya is not very good. But then why did it defeat Madhva's, you know, aspect? Why did it show that there's more beyond Dwait, that there's also the Advait and the simultaneous oneness and difference? So all it is just he wants to establish, he wants to be a Muni, establish his own position. And so that's what he does. He was a devotee or no?
I think 20 years ago he was in ISKCON. Then he joined to Gaudiya Math. Then he joined to Madhava Sampradaya. Then he became atheist. And then he became a scientist.
Okay. And so then he wrote the book afterwards.
He wrote this book during all of his life. It's a very long period.
Okay. Well, you can see is that that's probably why his life just kept going down. Is because he's writing this before. He doesn't have that proper faith and understanding. Yeah, but you're going to get that. Is that all people, Krishna is all attractive, therefore everyone's attractive. So even those who don't have the proper attitude still are attracted to some degree. So that's you know, what we were discussing before. That's the level of what your, you know, the preachers and that are supposed to clear. They're supposed to clear this stuff so that devotees don't become bewildered. That's their position. Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
Anything else?
Maharaj wanted to stop him, and he sent some devotees to discuss with him his philosophy. They tried to convince him, but nothing worked.
No, because the thing is, someone like that, you don't, because this is his uniqueness. This is his specialness. This is his PhD. It's his identity. So naturally, and he's not sincere about Krishna consciousness, so therefore you can't have Vada. You know, and even if he is defeated, he comes to the point in Nigrahastan, he'll never accept. Because someone has to be smart and intelligent to actually accept that there was something wrong.
Also, Maharaj.
So he, go ahead, please.
In the same way, we see when Madhvacharya was approached by that big Buddhist scholar, Madhvacharya saw no point in arguing with him because he would only present mundane logic. And he would not accept that there is a logic beyond. Because whenever you cannot prove, that's how they take shelter of that atheistic science, which is mundane logic. And that's why they could embrace Buddhism very nicely. So there is no point in arguing with them. So Madhvacharya just says that, you know, Hare Krishna?
Yes.
Yeah, Madhvacharya just says to them that, you know, by logic, you can not prove anything, you cannot disprove anything. So I can prove anything with logic, I can disprove anything with logic. So what is your point that if your pramana is logic, then there is no point of discussion. And that guy could not say anything and then he just left and he never came back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very nice. So it's just, you want to go beyond these things. Because for us, it's Krishna consciousness. That's what we're trying to establish. And that the path of pure devotion, then that is the actual path. So how far you're taking that, it's one path. Krishna says there's only one path. Somebody's taken this, oh, there's different paths. So, you know, there's the Vedic and then there's, the, you know, the modern and this and that. No, there's only one path. It's just that how far up the path you are. Because right? If we say there's different paths, we can say they're all equal. But if you say there's one path, then that means you have to be at different positions on that path. Then, you know, that will not be comfortable. Because when you point out is, yes, in philosophy, you may be working at Vijnanamoy or, you know, elements of Anandamoy. But on the religious platform, you're working down in Pranamoy or Anamoy. And so that's not going to be as developed as if, you know, they're both, you know, at Vijnanamoya and Anandamoya. So these kind of things they don't want to hear because they want to say it's different paths so they can show that we're all the same. In fact, our path is always obviously better. You know, that's how they'll think.
Also, Maharaj, the fundamental principle of material logic is contradiction. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, of all the qualities of the Lord, the foremost is that he is the Lord of contrary shaktis. So there are no, all the contradictions are resolved in the Lord. You know, at that point itself, that when they can't digest it, then there is no point of, you know, that.
I'll continue, yeah, because they can't see how the contradictions can come together with Krishna. That's a very good point. So you just go back to that fundamental point, and then from there, it's like with the Maya bodies. Where does what you say, the material? Where does it come from? Where does the jiva come from? How does where is it? If Brahman is not transforming, what transforms to get these things? Because if there's only Brahman, that means something had to transform to get material nature and the jiva. You know, so where did that come from? You can say it's an illusion, but that's a potency. Where did that potency come from? So that's the point, you know, there. So same with the logicians, since it's contradictions, since God is the source of everything, he's the source of all contradictions, so they're all reconciled in him. So only by understanding him, then you can work out all these points. So if someone can't accept that, then there's no real benefit to discussing. Yes.
Yes, Guru Maharaj, when we discussed Bhagavata Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, when he refuted different arguments of impersonal philosophy, it was very visible that his way of proving was based on the acceptance of Shastras as a basis.
Yes.
But
yes.
Thought that if we will, for example, if this discussion will be, for example, with such impersonalists like Buddhists or Taoists in China, they will not accept this arguments because they don't believe in Shastra. But I have a question: how Lord Chaitanya won the Buddhists? Was it done by giving them philosophical arguments, or it was just by giving them spiritual experience?
I mean, it would generally be because it's not necessarily that they would even accept, because you had those ones that they came to the point of Nigrahastana. They couldn't, by logic, they couldn't defeat. So they went away, and then they came back, you know, with the idea that, oh, well, you know, we've been defeated. We're bringing you something, you know, as an offering. But the offering was impure. And so then when they came to offer it to Lord Chaitanya, then this eagle came down and grabbed the plate and took it up in the air and took the impure stuff for itself and dropped the plate. And so the edge of the plate hit the Buddhist in the head, you know. And so then they understood, okay, don't mess with this person.
The
you
Buddhist
know, so,
leader,
so logic. Sorry?
The Buddhist leader.
Yeah, the Buddhist leader. The Buddhist leader, yeah. So the, but you see is that the Tattva Sandarbha, which is establishes what is Praman and Prameya and these things. So if you're dealing with someone who doesn't accept Shastra, you have to work on that level. You know, you're just using the logic, but you're going through and you're presenting the descending knowledge, and that you stick to the fundamentals, because they can't, the details will always get distracted by. And so since they only know their details, they won't understand ours and our, the authority that it's based on Shastra. Therefore, you just stick to the logic, the fundamentals of those principles. You know, the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, these kind of aspects, they're logical. And so then people can catch that, you know, or not, depending upon what they are. So you also have to then see is if it's worthwhile continuing in that environment or not, you know, in that discussion. But yeah. Okay. So then I think the time has come. And so we'll stop now and then we'll continue on Thursday. Right? Today's Tuesday, right?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. But we haven't finished Sutra 1, 2, 3. So on the third day we can discuss the three part of the 1, 2, 3. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.